This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. I'm speaking today to Raja Elaine Saraya, President of the Medico-Legal Society of Malaysia, and Ramakrishna Tharini, who is an advocate and solicitor, about the rights of the elderly within medical law. Rama and Elaine, thank you so much for joining me today. Perhaps we can begin with a broad strokes understanding of what medical law is.
Thanks, Mitra, for that question. Well, medical law, I think, is essentially the application of law where we talk about duties and responsibilities of healthcare providers and essentially the rights of patients.
Okay, so that's really interesting. Perhaps you can just outline for me, what are some of the rights of patients, especially some of the rights that we may not be aware of?
Well, I think particularly in these modern times, a lot of the decisions coming out from the courts, I think especially in the common law world, is very heavy about the rights of patients. In particular, when the courts talk about the decision-making process and the rights of patients to information, rights to access the information, rights to be told about risks, so on and so forth. So I think that is one of the main issues that we see in recent times, especially coming from decisions in the common law jurisdictions.
As a patient, do we have the right to refuse treatment?
Yes, of course. The right to refuse treatment, I think, is very old right, in fact. We're talking about, I think that right, unless, of course, there is reason to believe that the patient is without capacity to refuse that treatment. Anyone with capacity has the right to refuse treatment, even if it seems like the most reasonable treatment.
Right. Okay. And I'm glad you said that. We're going to get into that idea of capacity in a little bit. But first, Rama, perhaps you could explain to us, with regards to the elderly, what are some of the issues that can arise within the purview of medical law?
Certainly from a medico-legal standpoint, amongst the issues that often arise in the elderly is there is no provision in our law in general about when does someone have the capacity to consent. So that can be problematic. And if you speak to doctors privately, many of them will concede that it is troubling that there is no clear-cut definition as to what capacity is, as to when someone can be said to have capacity. Having said that, there are guidelines on the point by the Malaysian Medical Council, which is the professional regulatory body of the medical profession in Malaysia. And they have set out some guidelines which are based on internationally accepted parameters and certainly accepted by various common law jurisdictions which Malaysia is part of.
Could you share some of those guidelines?
Right. So in regard to the question of capacity,
right,
it's basically a functional test.
Okay.
Right. And this has been adopted by the Malaysian Medical Council. So it essentially, it's a test of whether the patient can understand the nature of the treatment proposed.
Okay.
Can they retain information pertaining to the nature of such treatment? Can they weigh that information and finally, whether they can come to a decision and whether they can communicate that decision. And communication here does not necessarily mean verbal communication alone. It can be by gesture, sign language, etc.
Okay, so who actually does this assessment of competency?
Right. The parameters are usually legally defined, or at least in the case of Malaysia, defined by a regulatory body.
Okay.
But the actual assessment has to be done by a medical person.
Okay. And what happens in the case where a patient, an elderly patient, cannot make decisions for themselves? What's the prescribed course?
Right. It depends. But broadly speaking, in Malaysia, what usually happens is that the doctors usually refer to the next of kin to come to a decision. Where there are no next of kin, what usually happens is the main treating doctor will make a decision by way of consensus by discussing the issue with another medical practitioner, preferably from the same specialty, and they both have to sign off in the medical records that this is the decision that they've taken.
Okay, so then... So
can I just jump in there,
yes,
if you don't mind?
Yeah.
This thing about elderly people making decisions for themselves. My view, I mean, based on the cases that I've seen sometimes and experienced doing medical legal work for a while now, is that I think there's been a real, almost dilution, I think, of the rights of the elderly sometimes. There's almost an assumption that the elderly are not able to make decisions for themselves.
Why do you think this assumption comes about?
Why do I think the assumption comes about? I'm not sure. I suspect it is just the sort of societal perception that we have currently at the moment that somehow when one reaches the age of being over 60, I'm not sure, I think 60 is the... Cut-off. Is that right, Rama?
That
the sort of cutoff point at this point in time. I actually think that's quite young.
I agree.
Yes, well, there you go. Somehow one loses that... It automatically loses that right to make one's own decision about one's healthcare. Particularly, I think sometimes when somebody else is paying, I suspect that may also be may feature. I'm not so sure.
Do you think there's a cultural element to it as well?
I think so. Also because we're still sort of close knit. Children sort of feeling that I'm responsible for my parent, I'm paying for my parent, therefore ask me the question whether or not my parent should go through that surgery or not. And sometimes there's a protective element to it. Sometimes they say, I would rather my parent not know. Then the issue of capacity isn't even addressed by the healthcare provider because then they get sort of lulled, I think, into this path of the children are then making decisions for the elderly. And I find that personally quite offensive, actually, because just because someone has reached over the age of 60 doesn't mean that person automatically loses that right to autonomy.
60 is nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is it at all possible then for an elderly person, or let's just say somebody who has reached the age of 60, is it at all possible for them to take proactive measures to safeguard their rights when it comes to medical legal perspective, perhaps like a living will?
Okay, so living wills, or the other, I think, phrase that we've been using at the moment are advanced care directives. Mm-hmm. So in jurisdictions, say outside of Malaysia, they are a lot of them are statute based. So it's embodied, I think, in an act most of the time. What is a living will? What is an advanced care directive? And some jurisdictions, correct me if I'm wrong, Rama, have things like lasting power of attorney. Attorneys and things like that, which we don't currently have.
Rama, perhaps you could help at this point in time, maybe just to define what a living will is in a situation where it's well defined.
Right. Broadly speaking, living wills generally focus on refusing life-saving treatment.
Okay.
Because they are normally binding only in those circumstances. You can put in other things like, where I want to be treated, what hospital I want to be in, but often, for practical reasons mainly, those provisions are not usually binding. The binding part is usually when you say, I don't want, for example, to be ventilated in the event if I suffer a cardiac arrest. Mm. I don't want antibiotics if I suffer a serious infection.
Or a DNR, do not resuscitate.
Okay.
Is it possible to add a provision in a living will to say that I would like to appoint somebody to make decisions for me should I become unable to do so for myself?
No.
In Malaysia, no.
No.
Wow.
No.
Okay.
But they do allow it in other jurisdictions. You can essentially, as what Elaine was referring to a moment ago, by way of a lasting power of attorney, you can actually appoint a proxy decision maker to make medical decisions on your behalf. Of course, in Malaysia, lasting powers of attorney have been in existence for a very long time, but they only relate to property and financial dealings.
I'm speaking to Raja Elaine Saraya, President of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia, and Ramakrishna Tharini, who is an advocate and solicitor, about the rights of the elderly within medical law. We're going to take a short break now. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. I'm speaking to Raja Elaine Soraya, President of the Medico-Legal Society of Malaysia, and Ramakrishna Tharini, who is an advocate and solicitor, about the rights of the elderly within medical law. Okay, so if I was an elderly person, if I was above 60 years old, and for some reason I felt that my personal autonomy was being deprived, either by a family member or even by medical staff themselves, what could I do? What could I possibly, who could I turn to?
A good lawyer. Basically, we were talking about it just now, weren't we, Rama? And unfortunately, I think there is no specific legislation that person could turn to, but the right in law to basically the autonomy of decision, that is common law. So if somebody else is making decisions for me without my agreement or consent, that's trespass, isn't it?
It is.
As long as I have capacity to make that decision. So on a very sort of basic level, that person could presumably sue the healthcare provider. I'm not trying to scare doctors and hospitals or not, for infringing his or her rights, isn't it, to consent and trespassing on his or her person. That's the basic.
Position. Because we're on this topic, let's go back to something that you mentioned a little bit earlier about confidentiality, right? It very often, and I've seen for myself personally, cases where, you know, the doctors and the healthcare providers are speaking not to the patient, but to the patient's family or next of kin. And to me, this seems not just troubling, but problematic. Perhaps you would just share your thoughts on this.
I think both Rama and I have come across this numerous times. I think, again, I'm back to that basic proposition that somehow when one reaches the age of over 60, you sort of lose those basic rights. And a right to confidentiality is both a legal right and it's also an ethical duty on the parts of the doctors to maintain confidentiality. It's a legal duty, it's an ethical duty.
So if a family member comes up to a doctor and says, doctor, I know that my parent has just been diagnosed with a life-ending disease, could you please not tell him or her the news, because I don't want to worry them. Can the doctor say no? Should the doctor say no?
Absolutely not, I think. That is the answer. Absolutely not, unless there is some therapeutic privilege. That is the only reason why information to a patient is not given, when perhaps that information can harm the patient. Most of the time, it's psychiatric patients, for example, who may not be able to take the news, for example. But that assessment must be done, I think, in very, very specific situations, and must be done properly. By and large, information about a patient's, condition, illness, or whatever, must be shared with that patient to enable that person to make that decision as to what steps to take about myself, isn't it?
It's their own health.
It's their right. It's their own health. Yes. Exactly.
If I may just add to that, suppose a doctor gets approached by a patient's family, an elderly patient's family member, saying that, look, my dad's been diagnosed with cancer. Please don't tell him because he won't take it too well.
Right.
I think a doctor should not adhere to such a request, certainly, as what Elaine had just pointed out. But at the same time, if the patient's family members have said that he's not going to take it too well, I think some judgment is required there. So I think the way to go about it would be to ask the patient, you know, how much information do you want? What degree do you want to know about your condition? I think there has to be some sensitivity in undertaking that exercise.
Sounds like a bit of a minefield, actually.
It is, but I think if we go to a very basic, back to basics, it's always the simplest. I think the patient has a right to know, unless there are quite exceptional circumstances. Therapeutic privilege is one of them. I think just because a family member says he or she would rather not know, that probably would not fall under the category of exceptional circumstances. But we see it happening so much. So please, healthcare providers, please be very, very sensitive to the fact that you are treating this patient. You're not treating his or her relative or family. You are treating the patient. Make sure that patient has the information that they need, I think, about themselves. So I find very little, I think, quite frankly, a reason to exclude the patient from a decision-making process unless the patient is incapacitated or there are extremely exceptional circumstances.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. Can we go into what exactly is incapacitated?
Yep.
Rama, this is all you.
Right. As I was alluding to earlier, there is no standard statutory definition of capacity in a medical context for the general adult population in Malaysia. There is a definition somewhat for patients who are undergoing psychiatric treatment, a compulsory psychiatric treatment, but we really don't want to go there because that's a small subset of the population.
Okay.
That's a different category altogether. But coming back to the elderly, there really is no standard definition. And what many, and what our doctors have adopted as well to a large extent is that functional test that I was alluding to earlier, you know, that four-stage test. Do you understand? Can you understand? Can you weigh the information? Can you retain it? Can you communicate a decision? So drilling down a little bit more. So, you know, in term, when a discussion takes place, you will assess things like, does the patient understand the risks of undergoing treatment?
Mm.
Does he understand the risks of not undergoing treatment, the adverse effect of that? So, you know, these are the issues that a medical practitioner would normally explore when assessing whether a patient has capacity or not.
Okay, so what are some of the provisions under current common law that actually do protect the rights of the elderly?
Well, there are several acts in other jurisdictions. Mm. I mean, if we don't have to go too far. If we just look at Singapore, for example, they have what is called Vulnerable Adults Act to protect the elderly. So essentially, one of the key features of that act is if a social worker sees an elderly person being battered at home, he can immediately enter the premises, make an assessment, and then have the patient, the elderly patient, rescued to, say, a care home or a hospital. For example,
does that same provision apply to elderly here under the Domestic Violence Act?
I think it's sometimes resorted to. Is that right, Rama?
What happens there is that you have to actually make an application to court.
Mm.
Whereas in Singapore, for example, the action is more immediate, if you like.
Right. Okay. I read a very troubling fact about how abandonment and neglect is not really a crime in Malaysia, that you can just leave an elderly person in a hospital and walk away and the police can't do anything about it. Is that true?
Yes.
It pretty much is.
Yes.
Wow. It's pretty shocking.
In fact, we were just speaking to a very senior geriatric consultant recently, and he was telling us that practically what they do is they try and, I think, refer to sort of welfare organisations or homes to try and find somewhere to sort of bed this elderly person, because that obviously happens sometimes, yes.
Okay, so on a more positive note, at the beginning of this year, the government did announce that it was planning to draft, I believe they called it an Elder Care Act, to better protect the rights of the elderly. What would the both of you like to see covered in this act? Elaine, perhaps we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I think initially, I think my understanding of this act is that it's to basically protect the vulnerable elderly when they are abused and so on and so forth. But I think we can do better. Mm. I think because at the moment Malaysia is how should I put it, is wanting perhaps in several areas of the law. So perhaps now that we're thinking of enacting some form of legislation, we should be looking at mental capacity issues, advanced care directives to have it statute-based, and perhaps lasting power of attorneys to enable, as you have mentioned earlier, Sumitra, the very important legal requirement to allow someone to delegate someone else to make decisions on his or herself should he or she become incapacitated later on, so that it is entrusted to someone that the patient himself feels can make that decision in the best interest of that patient in mind, you see. So those, I think, quite apart from issues of abuse, we can look at, like I said, mental capacity issues, living will issues, advanced care directives, and lasting power of attorneys. I think we might as well, I think, do it in one framework as opposed to then enacting several legislation on a very sporadic basis later on.
Rama, anything to add to that?
Yeah. Yes, I am in broad agreement with Elaine there. And if I may just go a little further, and this may sound a little controversial as well, I think enacting an Elderly Care Act without the necessary building blocks in place is a bit like jumping the gun. Mm. And the building blocks here are what Elaine alluded to earlier. We need an overarching Mental Capacity Act, not just to apply to the elderly, but to every adult patient who lacks capacity.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think, Rama, it's not just the elderly. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah. You can be mentally incapacitated at 19 or 17, like the Hillsbury disaster that we see. So, yes.
Anything else in terms of these building blocks that you speak of?
Yes. And the other building block that I think that definitely needs to be in place, that's quite acute if you ask me, is having an equivalent of the Vulnerable Adults Act here in Malaysia, so that, you know, social workers and other professionals can come to the rescue as and where appropriate. Mm. Because I think the problem of elder abuse is becoming an increasingly prevalent issue here in Malaysia. It may come to a shock to many because, you know, of the deep-rooted filial piety tradition amongst the communities that make up Malaysian society, but it is becoming an increasingly prevalent issue, especially in the urban setting where the families are becoming more nuclear and, you know, the other pressures of life tend to come to the fore more acutely.
And of course, vulnerable adults could encompass many different categories of people, is it not just the elderly?
Exactly. I'm in complete agreement there.
Mm. One thing that I wanted to get into was, are there any other end-of-life legal issues that the elderly have to contend with that we have not yet covered when it comes to palliative care, for example?
I think one of the issues sometimes healthcare providers find problematic is when you have very ill patients, they could be elderly or they could be young, it doesn't matter, and then continued treatment is not going to give benefit to them.
Yes.
But the healthcare provider is somehow feels obliged to continue keeping them resuscitated, you know, either ventilating or not, or providing nutrition, for example, and treating. Sometimes it's ad hoc treatment for infection, because sometimes when someone is dilapidated for a very long time, there'll be, you know, issues like infection and so on. So continued treatment is being given, although there is no benefit to the patient itself. So that, I think, we find not only for the elderly, but obviously with the elderly, perhaps it is more obvious. Sort of end-of-life issues, then the healthcare provider then asks the question, if I withdraw treatment or withhold treatment at that point, is the force of law going to come down on me? So I think those issues are for healthcare providers. They need to, I think, be aware of the fact that in those circumstances where continued treatment is not going to be benefit the patient anymore, but they have to make their assessment properly, of course. There is no longer any it's no longer in the interest of the patient to continue treatment. Then withholding treatment is not, generally speaking, a crime or a civil liability even. But that discussion must, of course, be held with family members and all that, because it's a very sensitive situation. But do not simply continue, you know, sort of prolonging without ensuring that the interest of the patient is not kept at the forefront of their minds, I think.
So a lot of what we've spoken about today is going to be covered at an upcoming forum titled Speaking for the Unspoken. Elaine, maybe a little bit of a skeleton as to what that's going to be all about?
Yes. Thank you very much for introducing the event, Sumitra. The Medical Legal Society of Malaysia, of which Rama and I are EXCO members of, will be organising a public event on the 13th of October 2019. It's a Sunday. It's a half-day event from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. It will be held at Bangunan Getah Asli Auditorium, Kuala Lumpur. And we'll be addressing issues relating not only to the elderly, but also children and the disabled, mental health and the criminal justice system, and the right to health of prisoners. And the speakers will include senior practitioners, and we'll also be inviting Datuk Mawin Kwai, Commissioner for Suhakam, and YB Puan Nurul Izzah Binti Omar to talk about about the right to health of prisoners, because I think that's her one of her pet projects, I think. So it should be quite an interesting discussion, Sumitra. Those interested, you can go to our Facebook page or our website, Medical Legal Society of Malaysia, or email our secretariat at mlsmsecretariat@gmail.com to register. It is free of charge for Medical Legal Society members, but for non-members, we are only charging a nominal cost of RM30 just to cover our costs, because we think these are important areas of discussion. Our forum is called Speaking for the Unspoken.
I would wholeheartedly agree. So, Elaine and Roma, all the very best for the forum. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I've been speaking with Raja Elaine Saraya, President of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia, and Ramakrishna Tharini, who is an advocate and solicitor, about the rights of the elderly within medical law. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.